We acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians of the land on which company has been recorded, the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation. We respect their continuing culture and the past and present contributions they have made to this region. You're listening to Company, the podcast connecting Australian artists, where we talk all things personal, professional, and spiritual. Joining you, as always, are your hosts, Georgia Kennedy and Tiana Catalano. Welcome back to Company.
Hello, hello.
It's been a couple of weeks, which is weird because we had like 3 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
Which was awesome. A little stressful with uni, but that's cool. We're back.
That's cool.
That's cool. And this week we have Barry Conrad.
Barry Conrad.
So do you want to explain how you kind of know Barry?
Yeah, I sort of grew up in the same circles as Barry. My mum's best friend is close with him, sort of 6 degrees of separation kind of thing. And then when I was 16, I went on X Factor with like platinum blonde hair. I looked an absolute mess. I was a state, but Barry was there too. And I sort of saw him at the side of that journey, and then I sadly got eliminated at the boot camps, but that's okay.
Devastating.
Devastating. But here we are now kind of doing musical theatre and everything else. But yeah, essentially I've sort of known of him for a while and seen his amazing journey from being within the pop music space, and he's quite a chameleon. I feel like he can do it all. He can do
I swear, yeah. Talking to him, it seems like he's like dipped his toes in everything.
Yeah. Like, and he's just up for the challenge of everything and loves the differences between sort of, we talked about Neighbours and musical theatre and the pop scene and like the differences between all of those scenes, and it was fascinating. So
yeah. And we left the interview, we did it before uni one day because now we're very fortunate, we're at uni in Perth, so we managed to fit him in just before class. But we left feeling so optimistic and so inspired, so we're so excited for you guys to listen to this episode. But before we begin, it's time for Riff of the Week.
Riff of the Week. Riff of the Week.
So my riff of the week has been inspired by my turning of age. I am now 25 and I had a bit of a freak out because I was kind of looking at my friends around me who are also turning 25, and, you know, a lot of them are getting houses with their partners and, you know, buying new cars or, you know, investing in things. And I kind of had a moment of, oh, I have nothing to my name.
I
literally have nothing. I'm still a poor student. So I kind of had this, I don't know, I think I had seen one of my friends actually share it on Instagram, and I started listening to a podcast called She's on the Money. And I was really drawn to it because it's a very kind of candid podcast talking about how to create financial security for yourself in the future, but starting now, and tiny little steps that you can take to do that. I highly, highly, highly recommend it for people to listen to, especially as a millennial, because even a thing like Afterpay, did not know, it can actually affect your ability to apply for mortgages in the future. It doesn't add to your credit, what's the word? Liability or whatever. You know, you get credit ratings.
Yeah.
It doesn't help it. It makes it worse because you don't live on a budget. You continuously live on future payments, and that's how they see it. So it can actually be a detriment to you investing in a house or getting a personal loan in the future. Did not know that.
Yikes.
There's also heaps of other episodes, and I just really like it, especially for women. It's kind of more aimed at women, but it can definitely be for all audiences, I think. And I'm obsessed. I've probably listened to like 10 episodes in the last like week, just because I find it so interesting, and it's a bit of a slap in the face because, yeah, the time is now to have that freedom and comfortability later.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. I've listened to that podcast as well, and I really enjoy it. And I think especially if you're going to be a freelance artist, like we're sort of planning to be, and you have 5 or 6 jobs on the go, it's really important to be on top of your money, figure out where your income's coming from and at what time, and try to, you know, shop wisely, invest wisely.
Yeah.
So that's a good one.
Yeah.
Mine is very different. It's a little show called Peaky Fucking Blinders, mate.
Oh.
My British boyfriend got me onto this. I've seen people sort of enjoy Peaky Blinders, but I never really got into it. I think I watched the first episode like 3 times, or the first 10 minutes, and I just wasn't feeling it. And then I started watching it with him, and I think because he was so excited, I then got like really excited too. And I was like, oh yeah, okay, cool. It's great. It's a period drama. It's set in Birmingham in the aftermath of the First World War. And it's about this gang called the Peaky Blinders. And I remember just being so excited after, I think it's the first episode, and I realized why the show was called Peaky Blinders, because they have little like knives in the peaks of their hats that they take out and blind people in the eyes. And I just remember watching that, and I was just so stoked. And I'm really set on it now. The acting is absolutely incredible, and I feel so immersed in the world of this Birmingham gang, and I'm really excited to go on the journey with them. And there's some really amazing badass female characters, which I really enjoy as well. Because in the first sort of 60 minutes, I was like, I have not seen a single female yet. What is going on? But then what's her name again? Aunt,
the actual like head of the Peaky Blinders, yeah, is a mother, isn't
she? She's the auntie of the guy that runs the ring.
Right.
I can't remember her name. She's a fucking badass. Badass. So yeah, I'm quite enjoying that.
I've only seen 2 episodes. I need to commit next time.
It's good. Commit. You'll get immersed.
Yep. All right. Done.
Barry Conrad has had a multifaceted career spanning across music, screen and stage. Barry rose to public recognition when he was named as one of the final 12 on Channel 7's The X Factor. He's opened for the likes of Brian McKnight, Craig David and Eric Bennett, and vocally produced and penned songs for an array of artists.
No stranger to screen, Barry landed a role on Fox's Power Rangers, Ninja Storm, and featured in numerous TV commercials before taking his first leap to feature films in the number one box office hit, The Sapphires. Barry's musical accolades include Violet, Hairspray and Grease Arena Spectaculars, Beautiful the Carole King Musical, and most recently, Madiba the Musical. On the eve of 2020, Barry reached a new career milestone, landing a guest role as Kane Jones on Australia's longest-running TV series, Neighbours.
Away from entertainment, he's a proud ambassador for suicide prevention charity Are You OK?, and in 2020 has signed on as an ambassador for both Virgin Active Australia and Mitsubishi Australia. Hey, Barry, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It's finally worked out and get to jump on here and do this.
Yeah, it's really exciting. It's good to see your face. I can't remember the last time I saw you. I think I was like a baby doing X Factor or something.
Oh, wow. That's a little bit. Yeah.
No, it's so good to see you.
You know, we met at Susan Son's place, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, years ago. How long ago was that?
Years ago when I was at Belva. I mean, I grew up with them, so it could have been when I was like 13, and then I saw you again when I did X Factor with my blonde hair when I was like 16.
Wow.
That was a time.
It was
a time.
Yeah. I didn't know you coloured your hair blonde. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Not the best. Not the best look, but I'm glad I did it young.
The same thing in high school. I liked this girl way back in high school, and I knew that she liked Cisco. He was like an R&B artist at the time. He had this peroxide blonde hair. I decided to do the same thing, and it was just not ideal.
Not a good time. No, you need to spend a good amount of money on good hair dye, and the peroxide and the bleach, it just didn't cut it. It just turned orange. No, that's a no from us.
Big no.
Amazing. Well, we thought we'd start off with asking you if you have any arts recommendations for us. So what have you been listening to or watching at the moment?
You know what? I've been watching a show called The Honourable Woman with Maggie Gyllenhaal. It's on Stan Australia. It's not new, but a friend of mine put me onto it, and it's so good. Just the performances are just incredible. The writing is great. It's so realistic and gritty. I've been watching some Ozark, which I binged like all of those seasons in like a couple of weeks. It was amazing. Dead to Me, which is on Netflix. That's pretty good as well. What else am I watching at the moment or listening to? I've been listening to some of my own stuff because I'm writing new music, which has been really exciting. So I'm going to be releasing something soon. So I've mainly been in that zone in terms of other people. I gave Taylor Swift's album a listen to the other day. It just came up on my Spotify suggestions. I'm not like a major fan, but I was like, I gave it a listen. It was great.
Yeah.
I'm pretty eclectic. As long as it's a good song, I'm all for it.
Another question we love to hear about is there a theater or performing experience that really moved or changed you as an artist?
Definitely. I would say a couple of them. The first one would be the very first musical theater show that I did, which is Violet. And it was a small production at the Hayes Theater. And it's a Tony Award-winning musical from the States, and it came my way. At the time, I was very hesitant because I had a lot of friends in theater and I knew it took them away from life. Like, you know, it's a long commitment. And I was like, oh, commitment issues. I don't want to do this thing. But my agent was like, it's a couple months. Why don't you give it a shot? And not just the time situation, but the material. When it came my way, looking at this character, I played an African-American soldier who falls in love. There's a bit of a love triangle with this girl named Violet. She's on this mission to find, you know, inner peace or like this healing. She thinks she has this deformity on her face, but really the deformity's inside. And so as she goes across, you know, the country, she meets this white soldier and this black soldier, and it's this triangle. But, you know, it really talks about racism and equality, and it's something that I certainly, you know, related to. So that was one thing that really changed not just me inside, but also my perspective of theater. It was my first foray into it. And from then I sort of had the bug and, you know, went on to do more. The second one would be Madiba, which is the last musical theater show that I did, which again is very personal because I'm from South Africa. So I played a South African in that show, and he's an interracial relationship. And it was during the same time that the apartheid was happening, which is, you know, when it was taboo to be in a relationship with a black and white person together. My parents went through that story. For example, they, you know, my mom was chased down the street by cops, you know, with batons and stuff like that. She had to jump on a train and all that kind of stuff. And they were there as well. So it was quite a full circle moment. So those two experiences were quite pivotal in terms of stage productions. And it certainly impacted me. And it's funny, you talk to a lot of actors and you really do take a piece of these characters with you. You know, they change you and the residue, it stays with you, at least some of it. That's what I believe anyway.
That's amazing. I wish I'd seen that production. It looked like it was incredible. Yeah. Well, on the flip side of that, do you have any funny theater or TV mishap stories?
Oh my gosh. how long do we have? I would definitely say one that sticks out the most is I did a show called Beautiful, a Carole King musical, and I played one of the drifters. I don't know if you saw the show at all. You did? Oh, man.
Yep.
There's one section where we do Broadway. The boys do the song called Broadway, and we have this choreography with the jacket. And as we're making our way across the stage, whilst doing steps, we do the spin. We put our jackets on. As we do the spin, I was like, oh, God. And there was one show where it didn't come off, I should say. And so what I actually did is I took the jacket and I threw it. I made the split decision just to throw it off the stage because it just wasn't working. And I didn't want to mess it up for the rest of the guys. So that was very important. You know, I was in Her Majesty's Theatre in Melbourne and I felt like just crawling underneath the orchestra pit. And yeah, the choreographer came by the dressing room and was like, are you okay, love? Are you right? Are you right? I was like so down about it. But, you know, it happens. You know, these things happen. But it was hilarious. Hilarious.
So funny. I guess that would be hard because you guys from memory, that whole bit is like completely in sync as things happen around you, right? Yeah. Maybe no.
It is. What about you girls? Have you had any, you know, things like that on stage or anything?
Yeah. It's mostly other people corpsing around me. Like someone will do a massive fart on stage and you've got to keep a straight face and you just, you can't. It's hard.
Yeah. I actually did that last year. So weird because I was literally the dance captain. So I knew these like routines backwards and forwards, but it had just been like a huge few days and it was the matinee performance. And I came out too early. Like we would all come out in like a triangle and I came out early, realized that I came out early and I was a guy in the scene. It was like the jailbreak scene in Crybaby. So I just started crumping. I was just like, yeah, I'm just going to do this for a bit and then everyone's going to meet me at the front and then I'll keep on going. And oh my God, it was, yeah, I died a little bit inside, but I was like, whatever, when in doubt, just start crumping. But God, there's so many stories. But let's get on to the next question, which is about how you started off as a singer and you did X Factor. Is that right?
Right. So yeah. I grew up in a musical family. So my parents both sang. It was always around and I didn't really think of it as a career or like a choice to do anything with it other than it was just not like normal until much later on. I joined a singing, dancing, breakdancing crew in New Zealand because I'm actually South African, but lived in New Zealand, now live here. So back in New Zealand, I joined this crew and we toured around New Zealand and the next stage was moving here. Moved here, as with a lot of groups, we broke up and, you know, my life was over. I was like, what do I do now? And I knew I had to sort of hustle and make money and still do something. And from that point, I started behind the scenes, started writing and doing background vocals for other artists like Stan Walker, Jessica Malboy, Guy Sebastian, people like that. And I was behind the scenes for a long time until there was a moment where I was mentoring artists for the X Factor. So a couple of boy bands and stuff and Jai Wadeford and stuff like that was mentoring them for the show. I had zero interest in auditioning. And one of my mates was there and he was like, he knew the executive producers. He's like, hey, this is my bro Barry. He's a really good singer. I was like, bro, really? Are you doing this right now? And so he said, sing for them. And so I sang a little John Legend. And they were like, oh, this would be a great opportunity for you. You should really change your life. And I was like, here we go. Anyway, I indulged them. I said, I'll turn up. Fast forward a couple of weeks later, I'm in Darling Harbour with a couple of my boys and we're eating steak. And they're like, aren't you meant to be at your audition? Isn't it today? I'm like, yep. So I deliberately missed it. I deliberately didn't go. I know, crazy. But I just was like, nah, I just... You know, it was really about fear and pride. And because I had done so much work in the industry, I felt like I had so much to lose if I gave it a shot. Anyway, at that exact same time, my second mother was going through cancer. She was really terminally ill. And she said to me, you know, you really should really just give it everything you got. Life's so brief. It's so fragile. Go for it. And I was riding home from the studio one night, really late. And you know that Coldplay song, Fix You? It came on and I'd heard it 1,000 times, but the line that says, if you never try and live and know just what you're worth, you know, just hit me like a ton of bricks. And I pulled over on the side of the street. I was like, I've got to do this show. And I just have to. So I went back to the producers. I said, is there any possible way? I've missed my Sydney audition. I would love to do this. And they flew me down to the very final day of auditions in Melbourne. And I got through and that's that. But I mean, I was this close to just not doing it.
Wow.
So that's okay. Where I've been able to build, you know, my platform and keep working in the industry, you know, in a good way. So it's been good.
Yeah. And then what made you segue into theatre then?
You know what? I'm signed to an acting agency as well. And again, they had thrown theatre at me for so long. I'd studied acting in New Zealand, so I'm trained in that way, but for screen, never for theater. And because of commitment issues, I'm like, nah, I'm not going to do theater. It's going to be too long. It sounds too intense. And it wasn't until Violet came, and it was that short run. I gave it a go. And from there, I was like, okay, well, this actually combines all of my skills. you know, singing, dancing, acting. And I've never been more well-rounded because of that, deciding to go into that world. Like, it just really develops everything you've got because you have nowhere to hide. You're on stage and there's no retakes, you know, throwing jackets off the stage, you know, forgetting lines, forgetting choreography. That immediate rush of like, okay, sink or swim. It's quite amazing, that feeling of adrenaline, and also the feeling of preparation meeting that opportunity and you kill it. That's also super rewarding. So, you know, I've grown so much because of that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing. And then in terms of the sort of musical theater community versus the sort of pop X Factor community, what are the differences you find there, and also the screen community? So I feel like there are some differences.
Because I actually think there are differences, for sure. I know people think, oh, all creatives are creative, it's the same, but it's different. It's more to do with the energy. I feel like the energy, for example, in musical theater world is very generally quite big and quite, you know, people will tell you their life story straight away. But then just meeting them, you know, it's very much hard on your sleeve. With the screen world, it's a little bit of that, but it's a bit more reserved, a bit more chill, you know. With the music industry, sadly, what I would actually say is as soon as I came into the musical theater community, it was refreshing because in the music industry, it can be quite territorial. It can be quite at times cold, meaning you won't necessarily have somebody cross the room to say hi, or you know, be generous with their time or try to help you because it's like, this is mine sort of thing. Whereas I find within the acting community, generally speaking, people are a lot more empathetic because we're actors, but just more understanding and more embracing who you are, I think, and accepting. That was actually quite a stark contrast that I noticed straight away. It's like, wow, I felt so like I had to be guarded in the music industry, and I didn't know until I stepped into this new world here. So that's quite different, I would say. And I think I've always been someone that it doesn't really cost you anything to cross a room. If you don't know someone, just to say hi or just to make someone feel welcome, or, you know, not like they're an outsider. I'm all about breaking that thing. Cause I mean, at the end of the day, we're all people. It doesn't matter. You know, if you've got a song in the charts or how rich you are, like, we all started at the same place. So, yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Wow. And did you feel like you really had to sell yourself when you were in that pop industry as well?
Sell myself. I think it can be quite clicky. I think it's like that in a lot of industries though. Like, you, once you get into a club, you find success and you find work, and I can't complain about that because I've been in those situations. I just think it's an energy thing. As I said before, the culture is just very different. It's a lot more, there's so many limited opportunities. I'm not going to share these contacts with you or help you out necessarily, because as a songwriter, which I am, like, we make our money from royalties and publishing. So oftentimes when you write a song, some people might not want you to be part of the session because that means dividing some of the pie with you, or, you know, if that makes sense. So it's more what's mine is mine. Whereas I think in the acting community in general, it's a lot more, yeah, of course you get a little bit of that, but it's a lot more open. And I feel like it's good to kind of have both those things, and to learn from each thing, and also to be aware to not be like that. It's a constant reminder for myself as well.
Amazing. Yeah. And then how did Neighbours come about for you, and how are you finding that whole experience on the flip side?
Oh, wow. So after my diva finished, I had a bit of time, and my agent was like, why don't you go back over to LA? And I took some time and went over to Los Angeles, and I had the most amazing time there and met some management, met some great people in the industry over there. But I couldn't really move forward because of the visa situation, you know, like, you need a visa to be able to work. So I came back on this high, and I'm like, oh, I'm so frustrated. Like, I want things to happen quicker, as so many of us do. And it never stops, really. But I came back and I was like, what can I do to be proactive and not just wait? Because I believe, yeah, it's good to have an agent and they have a certain job that they do. at the same time, I really think it's important for artists, actors to be proactive as well. It's really like a marriage. It's like a relationship, a give and take. And so what I did was I emailed a bunch of people. I was at home one day and I was like, you know, I'm just going to email a bunch of people, like my information. And there was a general email on this website with Fremantle, and they take care of X Factor and Neighbours and Wentworth and all that. And I sort of just forgot about it. A couple of weeks went by, and in the PA of the CEO, the new CEO, got back to me saying, hey, you know, he would love to actually meet with you. And so, okay, great. So I went in for a meeting with the CEO of Fremantle, and he said, as soon as I got in there, it was like, so tell me what you want, you know, tell me about you. Like, you know, and that's not something that happens ever. And I just immediately felt, you know, encouraged, a warmth. I felt championed. I felt like, wow, someone's in my corner who has no reason to be like that and has no reason to help me because he doesn't know me, but obviously sees something. And we just got talking, and you know, we got talking about Neighbours and things. I said, would love to, you know, test for that. And he said, I'll put you in touch with X, Y, and Z. And, you know, people say things all the time. And it's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, let's see if it happens. Another week went by, a couple weeks went by, and I get an email CCing those people in, like the casting director and all these people. And next thing you know, I'm flying to Melbourne to put down a test, you know, with them. And I was there for 2 days. So the first day I went to do the test, and I left going, oh man, I think I blew that. I just was so nervous. And you know, that's the danger as well. Like, you just don't want to blow it because it's an opportunity like that. But obviously did enough to get over the line, because the following day I had to go out to the actual studio, which also doesn't happen because I thought I was just doing the test and then going home. But they said, we want you to come out tomorrow to just meet the crew. And I was like, okay, great. So I'm there, been taken around the studios and by the producer saying, these are the writers, these are the wardrobe. I'm like, okay, this is great. Like, this never happens. And it just felt quite surreal. And I just kept on thinking, please, does this mean something? Because I don't want to be meeting all these people and then have to get on the plane and go home. And then she said, you know, we loved your test. And, you know, we have something that, a character that would be great for you. Again, I didn't hear anything. And then weeks and weeks went by and I thought, that's it. And then my agent just called me. I was about to go to acting class one night. She called saying, you don't have to put another test down. They're offering you a role. I'm like, what? So it really came from, it started with just being proactive, and it just really reaffirmed to me, and to tell everybody out there listening, don't ever underestimate what's in your hand, meaning don't think that you reaching out to somebody doesn't mean anything. You know, really do all that's in your control to move forward. Don't wait for your agent. You know, they're great, but also, you know, step out, cross the room, make that call, send that email, back yourself, because, you know, look what can happen. I mean, who knows what would happen if I hadn't just sent that random email to like all these people, you know? So that's how that came about. And I was meant to go for one little stint and kept getting written back in. So, I mean, now a reoccurring character, which is great, you know? Yeah.
That's unreal. That's so cool. Staying proactive and seeing what happens is incredible. Yeah. Wow, look at you. So have you ever felt pressured to sing or act within a specific genre or typecast as a person of color? I've sort of been typecast as, oh, you must be an R&B singer then. You must sing soul, and not really sort of seeing me in any other sort of genre. And if so, how have you found ways to sort of work around that or change that perception?
I totally 100% relate to what you just said. There was a time where I put out a single and I deliberately made it quite poppy, like, which is very different to what people were used to me from the past, because I know the market that we're in here, and that's just is what it is. And I remember very vividly, and I think I've shared this before on social media, where we sent the song to a big radio station here, and literally like a minute later, like they hadn't even listened to the song yet, and they were like, sorry, we're not really playing R&B right now. So it's like, you're not even giving it a chance. You're replying based on what your idea of what I do because the color of my skin. And that's just the reality. Whereas if I had blue eyes and, you know, blonde hair, you wouldn't box me. And that's just, you know, that's not a racist thing for me to say. It's just my reality growing up, and my reality in the industry is, unfortunately, you are typecast by the way you look or the way you're presented. But from the past, like X Factor presented me in that way as well. So I understand that. I don't agree with it though. So I do think that, yes, to answer your question, I have felt typecast. And it's unfortunate that sometimes we feel we have to change our natural bent to be given a bigger platform or like a bigger shot, you know? Yeah, I don't know if that answers your question entirely, but yeah, I have been pressured to feel like I should change who I am. I don't think that we should have to though. And I think it's a really interesting time that we're living in now where it's shaking the boat with everything, not just race, but just everything in general, and making people kind of go, you know what really matters, and equality across the board, I think.
Yeah, wow. And what are some ways you think that we could practice active anti-racism within the arts and entertainment industry?
Gosh, what a question. I think first and foremost, for all of us, just taking responsibility for our own knowledge, meaning, and I have to be really careful, I guess, with how I answer this, because it's, you know, I'm African, German, English and Indonesian descent, but, you know, I identify as black, you know, I'm mixed, I'm black man. So this is very much something that's part of my world and something I've had to face my whole life. What I would say in terms of how to practice anti-racism is, don't expect people of color to have the answers. You know, like really, really doing your own research, really taking responsibility for your, I think what's important is your language. You know, even if you find yourself throwing around stereotypical culture, cool language, you know, the N-word particularly, you know, it's a lot of the time it's in hip-hop music, things like that. You know, people can kind of just say it flippantly, but where that's come from and the weight that that carries is just, there's so much more to it. I think all that's coming to the surface more now these days. You know, reading, there's plenty of resource out there, not just about Australia, but also in the States, South Africa, about, you know, that whole journey and just really, really digging into that. I think if you don't know the answer, to be okay with saying that you don't know the answer and not feeling that pressure. Because I know on the flip side of that, the English side of me, like I also empathize with white people too, because it's like, you know, a lot of you can feel, well, gosh, you know, is everything that I say wrong? You know, I can't say, I'm just scared to say anything, you know, and that's not the answer as well, because we're all just stumbling our way through it. There's no perfect person. Does that answer your question at all? I don't know if I am.
Yeah. No, we're all making mistakes in this time, but we'll all just have to keep learning and listening to each other and being empathetic and compassionate with one another. But I get the whole mixed race thing. That's been a really hard thing for me because, again, I'm like Colombian, Caribbean, right, Australian, Irish. So it's hard to feel like where I sort of sit, because I feel exactly the same. I can identify with being a black woman, but I can also identify with being white and having like growing up with the sort of white privileges that other people around me did. So, yeah, it's a really interesting time, but I'm learning and I'm listening. So yeah,
there's really racism within race, which is really interesting.
Yeah,
like you, for example, over here, I'm the token black guy for casting and whatnot. But when I go back to South Africa or when I'm in America, I'm not seen like that. I'm seen as, oh, you're like a light skinned guy. You got that privilege. You're not really black though. You don't understand. You know. So it's different. So there's racism within race, and the darker you are, you know, a lot of the times some of you can feel like you're jibbing them. It's like you're taking away the opportunity or whatnot. And I felt that as well. Like, well, it's different for you. You don't understand. It's like, I do understand. Just because of the shade of our skin is different doesn't mean that I don't understand. So it's quite interesting over here. People think it's white against black, but it's not that. I think it's racism against racism. You know?
Yeah, 100%.
That's my perspective anyway.
Yeah. And the conversation isn't black and white either. Like, there are so many gray areas. Yeah, amazing. No, thank you for that answer and sort of talking on that. Beautiful.
Also, to add, I just really do think that hopefully this is an opportunity for us here locally to be more inclusive with our casting, not just in the arts, but in every industry here, just to really give people an equal opportunity. But specifically because this is a creative podcast, absolutely for casting and whatnot, just to really, there's so much talent here. It's unbelievable. And I'm sure you know that people that have never been in a professional show or TV show and they're just waiting in the wings and they're amazing. They just need to be given a little shot, that's all.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. 100%. Well, then sort of on the flip side of that, I know that you are very active at the gym and active with your personal fitness regime. So how does being at the gym and keeping really fit keep you at your optimum level as a performer? And do you sort of integrate those disciplines?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I started training when I was like 15, so I just love it. It's always been a passion, health and fitness, training. It's nothing that I find a chore, and I feel like it's only sort of grown with time. It absolutely helps me with my craft and my output, because being on stage takes energy. When you're doing musical theater, for example, it's 8 shows a week, 6 days a week. That's no joke. It's like you're like a monk. It's like eat, sleep, train, do the show, repeat, you know, rinse, wash and repeat. And, you know, you need that energy. You can't sort of fake that. You're not just sitting at a desk and typing numbers. You're like on stage, you're giving it. To add to that, I've got 1.5 lungs. You know, a couple of years ago, I had like the lung equivalent of a heart attack. I had a PE, like a pulmonary embolism, which meant I had to rehabilitate even speaking because I couldn't go a few words without going. I was like, so like I had to relearn. I thought I'd never sing again, let alone train. So it's that extra motivation now to really push myself constantly because I feel more limitations. It's not the same as before. Not having that same capacity. So being in the gym is important, being healthy as much as I can. I mean, I love a good treat meal. You know, I do and stuff like that, which is awesome. But I definitely enjoy food. I'm not a slave to it. I think it's important to have a healthy sort of relationship with food, especially in our industry where everything can be about aesthetic and, you know, chicks are like, oh, I need to be skinny. Like, dude, you need to be, you know, like, I think just be your best self. That sounds so cliche, but just really work with your body. Everyone's genes are different. You're not going to look like the next person. Just work with what you got and do the best with that. But I definitely think it helps with my performance and day to day. It just helps my mental health. It's my regime. I'll get up, I'll train, and it sort of helps me set my mind for the day and sort of get out any angst or get out any, you know, it's good. What about you? Do you guys do the same thing? You train?
Yeah, like we sort of go to the gym or do little cardio hits and that sort of thing. But we are dancing quite a bit at uni as well.
Yeah.
Ballet, tap, jazz.
Yeah. I'm finding it like weird figuring out what I like the most because I was doing F45. And I hated it. I hated it so much. I was just like, are we seriously moving on to the next thing? I just picked up the weight. And then I was just getting injured left, right, and center because I was like, we're talking about it the other day, like doing dancing, you don't necessarily have strong arms. You have a strong back, you know? So when we've been doing weight work with our arms, I'm like, how can I not lift like 3 kilos? Yeah. But we really don't use our arms. No. Love leg work, all for the leg work. So I'm trying to like, figure out I'm doing like all the introductory offers like around the place because everything's like reopened and I love Pilates Reformer and I've done like the KX Pilates before, which is like kind of HIIT Pilates, and I think that's my thing. But like F45, nah, I'm not for it. I'd rather do my own cardio. But it's like, yeah, I think it's hard because some things work for some people. I've never grown up doing sports. So I'm just like, this is just no. But yeah, I don't know. We're lucky. We get to dance like most days as part of the course. So we're kind of, you know, pretty fit. But then it's just we're about to do a chorus line. So we're like, oh, we should probably step it up even more. So,
yeah. Totally.
Is there any advice that you would give to your younger self heading into the industry?
Oh, wow. Let me see. I would say, first of all, relax and know that what you have, you're in your own lane. You know what I mean? Like your flavor and your spice is going to be different from the next person. And it can be so easy to get caught up in comparison. But what I would say to take the pressure off yourself and just realize that what you can do, nobody else can do. So just really lean into that and don't look in the left and the right. Just focus on what you're doing. And it's okay to fall. It's okay to fail. And that's part of it, actually. Being afraid to do those things will keep you paralyzed, will keep you stagnant and keep you idle. So I would just say, relax a bit more, keep your eye on the prize, don't be afraid to fail and to fall. Surround yourself with people that can be encouraging but also honest in a constructive way. You don't want to have blinders on as well and just be told, oh, everything's great, you're so amazing. It's like, I don't want to keep hearing I'm amazing. I want to hear that was good and you can improve in this way. Keep upskilling. There's no substitute for hard work. There's absolutely no substitute for just consistency and hard work and embracing the mundane, meaning all the little boring things that you think that you do day in and day out that doesn't get seen by people, your vocal lessons, your dancing lessons, your acting lessons, your accent lessons, working in yourself as a person. Those things don't have an audience, but those things are so important and that can be the boring stuff. So I say, embrace the mundane, embrace the boring, because all that adds up. And when you meet the moment, that stuff just shows. You don't have to, when you buy a coffee at the cafe, you don't say, hey, let me act. I'm having a coffee. You can see someone's having the coffee. It's the same thing. If you're doing those things in the unseen, it's going to show. So really, really don't underestimate that. And, Say yes more and worry about it later. A lot of the time we can be, oh, I'm too afraid to do that. I'm too afraid to do that. Say yes and do it afraid. Like that never ends. I'm constantly doing things afraid and I might have a poker face, but inside I'm like dying. I'm like, oh damn, please don't jack this up. You know, and it's part of the excitement as well. Like you never want to feel like you've arrived or like I got this. You want to always feel like, cool, here's another challenge. Let me challenge myself. So embrace the mundane. Don't be afraid to fall. Surround yourself with positive people. Say yes more. Do it afraid. And also find things that make you happy outside of performing. I think when you just get consumed by this dream or your goal, it can be quite consuming and quite isolating as well. So yes, really, it's important to have like a great amount of determination and focus. At the same time, things can change like that in your life. So if you don't have other things in your life that make you happy or bring you joy, you're going to try to find your validation in just your performing or your talent. And that stuff can change a lot and circumstances can change. So fill your life with other things that also make you happy. And then that way you have a more balanced life. And then that can inform your art. But if you're not living your life like you're just in this bubble, live life and that'll make your art richer and make you better as a performer because you're growing as a person. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Couldn't agree more. I love that. And then how would you define success in your own life?
Happiness. I think success first and foremost for me is happiness and happiness to me. You learn this over time, like nothing really matters if you're not happy. So that has to come first. If what I'm doing is just to get ahead, but I'm not enjoying it, it's not worth it. So success for me is being able to spend my time the way I want with the people I want and doing the things that I want and not on anybody else's terms. And I think obviously that keeps changing over time in terms of the detail of that, but I think that's just a simple thing that keeps things in perspective for me and keeps my why strong with what I do. You know, having a strong why am I doing this? Why do I wake up? Why do I perform? And what does success mean to me? Does it mean money? Does it mean this? And all of those things, yes, but ultimately it's like happiness first. And then if I can do the money and everything with that, all that's great. The accolades, great. The, you know, resume, all that kind of stuff, cool. But happiness has to be the goal first for me.
Amazing.
That's so nice. Yeah. Like that. It's awesome. And what are your hopes for the industry in the future? And what would you like to see change?
Well, for COVID to just get out of here for starters, and so we can start getting out and about again and doing our thing. What I would like to see change is more inclusivity, more equality across the board, not just in race, but you know, sexuality, you know, gender, race, you know, equal pay, equal opportunity. And we have so much talent here again, like we don't need to bring people from overseas over here. There's so much happening here, so I'd like to see that change. I would like to see our government get more behind the arts. I would love to see that change in a big way, because where do people turn to during this time? Netflix, music, Spotify, you know, it's the arts. Don't try to differentiate just because someone's on the TV or on your Spotify. It's no different. Those people are here. We are those people. Like, you know, support us so that we can become, I mean, that's where you run to. So I would really like to see that change for sure. And yeah, just for you know, new writers and creators to be given more opportunities to tell new stories, so they don't keep recycling the same shows, or you know what I mean, as well.
Yeah. Totally agree.
What do you want to change in the industry?
I absolutely agree. I think there needs to be a lot more funding from the government for the arts, and they need to understand the importance of it. I would love to see a lot more equity within the arts, more people of color, more stories about trans, bisexual, queer, LGBTQI plus stories. I think we need to see a lot more of that. Right. And a lot more of, I'd love to see people of all different shapes and sizes being leads, not just the skinny person or the person with the correct physique, whatever that means. Right. A lot more diversity with that too.
Yeah. I kind of want to see change educationally that will then transpire into the industry. And I think that this kind of training is only open to certain kind of classes and, you know, people with money. And I want to see change in that. And I don't know how we do it yet, but yeah, I'm very interested in kind of like education and stuff. So I guess that's where my mind goes to. And knowing that you can get a whole wide range of people going into universities, not just the people that were able to afford to have two singing lessons a week or dance their whole life or whatever. And yeah, I'd like to see that change, because then I think our industry will grow even more and represent more people properly, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I also think, you know, what would be great is if in schools we're taught more about money, because I feel like a lot of performers that I meet as well, they get to a certain point, they're like, oh, you know, what do I do? Like, I haven't been taught how to deal with money or the realities of life or the practicalities of life, or when a gig stops, how can I create passive income? How can I create other streams of income outside of just trading time for money? You know, I think that's such a dangerous place to be in. So I feel like even introducing into schools, like, this is, let me equip you of how to deal with that, you know, and to teach artists in performing arts universities and schools other tools other than just performing, business savvy, you know, this is an industry and it's a business. So I think I'd like to see that change as well somehow. I don't know when, but it'd be great.
Absolutely. I agree. I mean, We're starting to learn a bit more about that at our uni, and that's something that they're thinking of. But I think from a young age, we need to learn to be business savvy, especially if you want to come into this industry, because you're going to need a lot of different streams of income to sort of stay afloat.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, I'm so sad, but that's all we have time for. Thank you so much for being with us. I could just talk to you for hours.
No, it's fine. It's really good. I mean, this stuff, yeah, we can just pull up a couple of drinks and some food and keep talking, but
yeah,
maybe another time maybe.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
when we graduate.
When we come over.
Eventually.
When we come over to Sydney, yeah.
Eventually graduate.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it. And, yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I loved that episode. I actually really did.
It was so good.
It was really good. We just left feeling so motivated and inspired and happy. And I love how he kept sort of bringing the questions onto us too. That was funny.
Yeah, that was the first time ever, like, someone's asked us, oh, what about you girls? What do you think?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I mean, I write the questions, but
I sit and listen to you.
Yeah. But no, it was so good. And I really took away the whole thing of embracing the mundane, because I am so one of those people that just wants to jump to the exciting stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do the vocal exercises. I just want to sing. But it's so important. And it's the same with dancing. And I think that can be forgotten sometimes. We really need to have all that foundation work there, which can be boring and, you know, tiresome, but it just creates such good art in the end if you can put the time into it.
Yeah. No, he is incredibly hardworking, big inspiration, and I really hope I see him in Hamilton the musical just quietly. Thanks for listening to this episode of Company. If you'd like to find out more about Barry and his work, you can visit his website, Barry Conrad Official, or jump onto his Insta at Barry Conrad or Facebook, Barry Conrad as well. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode and open up discussion on our Instagram at Company Pod and our Facebook Company Podcast.
Thank you to our producing guru, Douglas Rintel, our media queen, Deidre Koo, also known as Deedle Dum Designs, and David Duquette on music. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.